This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Vipolis, and this is In the Trenches, where I'm joined by my fellow Carolina football lettermen, Mike Ingersoll and EJ Wilson. Guys, we've been talking about the problems that this team has, and they all came to light Saturday in Keenan Stadium with Notre Dame winning 45-32. It was a game that, to put it quite frankly, it humbled a 3-0 Tar Heel team and kind of exposed the team for what they are and what they potentially could be in the season. I think it kind of dampered some expectations and reset some of the hopes that fans had for this team with Notre Dame kind of controlling that on both sides of the ball. Mike, let's start with you. What were your biggest takeaways from the game?
Yeah, I think that some concerns we had were confirmed. I think that some things we were pretty high on also were confirmed. We'll get to that. I think pass protection overall is still pretty good. It's on the offensive line, because obviously that's what I'm paying the closest attention to. And I will say that it was brought to my attention that there was a thread on the message boards that was none too pleased with our last outing on the Positivity Pod. And what I'll say is it was, number one, it was brought to my attention because I don't read the boards. Sorry to anybody that's ever tried to send me a direct message or communicate with me on the boards. I'm not ignoring you. I just don't see it. I take the Tucker Carlson approach to the internet in that I just don't pay attention to it. And if I could not have a TV in my house, I would take that approach too. So I was told that there was a thread where some folks were not happy with things that we had said or the tone that we had taken. What I'll say, and not in our defense, but as an explanation, is that if EJ and I ever come off as negative Nancys, or if we're being overly critical, I should say too, let me caveat overly critical with, we do our best never to name specific players that we might have an issue with, because we know what that feels like. And we know that the guys, whether they ignore the podcast and they ignore the message boards, you know, they don't ignore Twitter, they don't ignore social media, that stuff gets back to them one way or another. So we do our best not to be overly critical of specific players, because we also understand how, you can have a bad game one week and have a really, really good game the next week. And, you know, I like to believe that the player you see that plays really well, that's who that player really is. And everybody has down weeks. So we do our best not to be overly critical of individual players, but if we feel, if the fans and, you know, subscribers and folks that listen to this stuff feel like we're being overly critical of the team or of the scheme or of the staff or whatever, you know, whatever you have, or we're not giving folks enough credit, you know, for a 3-0 start, it's because EJ and I, and Vip also have, the three of us have a personal stake in this. You know, we see it from a slightly different vantage point. And being hypercritical is the only way that any of us were any good at football. It's the only way that any of us were good enough to make it to the Division I level and play Division I football. It's just that hypersensitivity to mistakes and a hypersensitivity to constructive criticism, being constructively critical with ourselves. That's something that I take pride in with myself, and I often feel that I'm maybe too hard on myself. I know EJ takes a similar approach and Vip takes a similar approach in his life. And we talk about these things off the air. These are conversations that we have with each other. So it's not that we are trying to knock the team down. It's not that we're trying to be overly negative. It's not that we're trying to send a bad message or that we've, thrown in the towel or that we're super down on the team and the program. That's not it at all. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. We have expectations, whether they're realistic or not, based on history. Okay. We have expectations as former players that are extremely high. And, we have we are optimistic to the point to where it tears us up when we see things that don't go well. This weekend was a perfect example. We saw things we were concerned with the last few weeks. We've been trying to bring attention to that. Now, the tone and the delivery may not have been super positive. It may not have been the way that people wanted the message delivered, but the message we were delivering was, unfortunately, turned out to be true on some of the bad stuff. And on the good stuff, it was also true, at least as far as I saw against Notre Dame, which is, from an offensive standpoint, that's a very good defense we went up against. So just understand that we look at things differently. We have a personal stake in it. This is something EJ and I had a phone call about last week. We have a slightly different perspective on this season, on this team, on this program. And we have certain expectations that when they're not met, when the standard that we want this program to reach, to hit, isn't met, it feels very personal to us. And I understand it feels very personal to subscribers and fans, because I was a blue blood Carolina fan my whole life growing up and had no skin in the game. Nobody in my family ever went to college. So I was just a Carolina fan because I liked the colors and I liked the school and I lived in North Carolina. I then became a Tar Heel, and it's just very personal to me. It's very personal to EJ. It's very personal to Vip. So we will do our best not to be overly critical and, to be negative Nancy's. This is the positivity pod, which I've always said sarcastically. I think EJ's taking it seriously. But we'll continue to provide, the best analysis that we can on the O-line and the D-line. And, with the understanding that, and I think everybody should understand this. These are college kids and they're working their butts off and they really are playing as hard as they possibly can. And sometimes it's just not their fault when things don't go properly, but it's our job to dissect it. It's our job to break it down from an expert standpoint, which is, whether we're good experts or bad experts, it's kind of what we are just because we played it. We're obviously not on, ESPN doing this for $1 million a year, but we do understand at a slightly nuanced level. So we're looking at here. So we'll keep trying to break that down for everybody and do it as best we can. And, please accept my apologies if tone or delivery was not what people expected or wanted, but 3-0 at that point was not the 3-0 that it was 3-0 as in there was three wins and no losses. It wasn't 3-0 as in we were about to go win a national championship. Yeah. And I think that was our point. And that became very apparent this past weekend, that there's a lot of holes to fill and things to work on. Yeah. Now to get back to Taylor's original question, I saw good things in pass protection. I saw regression somewhat in the run game. I think we're being a little overly complicated in our RPO and our play action schemes. We might need to simplify that stuff a little bit. Twists got us. I thought we'd clean that up from last season. Defensive line twists really got the offensive line against Notre Dame, particularly in the second half. And then we'll talk about the issues that I think we had in the run game and why we just weren't able to run the ball effectively. And EJ, I'm sure we'll have a lot more on the defensive side of the ball, but I like to get out of the problem and into the solution a little bit. And I think to get out of the problem and into the solution on this means, look, we got to score 60 points to win games. Okay. We're capable of scoring 60 points every single football game. I mean, we are, our offense sputtered in the first half after that touchdown drive, and we still put up 32 points by the end, and it should have been 35. I mean, Drake May throws 5 touchdown passes. That's something. And I think that's something that really deserves a lot of credit and a lot of attention, that this team can score at will. And even when they have, half a game is not productive, they're still dropping 5 touchdowns. So that's something we didn't do when I was there. I know that for a fact. And that is definitely a positive for us.
Yeah. After the Georgia State game, we try to make the caveat, like this team did deserve credit for being 3-0. I think from our experiences in the locker room, we know how hard it is to go out there for an entire week of practice, go out in a game against guys that are on scholarship and come out with a win.
Look at Miami.
Yeah. Miami is the perfect example this week, going down to Middle Tennessee. Every week teams that are double-digit favorites catch another team, or a team that's a double-digit favorite gets caught sleeping, a team goes into some other place and upsets them. North Carolina did deserve a lot of credit for being 3-0, but our larger point was, if this team continues playing the way they do, teams will catch them. When the offense has an off day or an off half, or the defense continues to play the way the defense continues to play, better teams, once the talent goes up from the group of five, the Sun Belt Conference teams, to a team like Notre Dame, who is a top 25 team, regardless of losing to Marshall or however the game, however close the game was against California. Our larger point was that eventually this team was going to face a lot of trouble. And you kind of saw that on Saturday against Notre Dame. EJ, what about you? What were your biggest takeaways? I'm sure you have a lot of takeaways, because the talk of this team has been the defense.
I think what was really taken away from me this game was like my confidence in the defensive line. If it was one thing going into this game, if you were to ask me what was one thing that you're absolutely not worried about, no matter what the outcome was, I would say that we would at least have shown that we can play with anybody in the country with our defensive line. I kind of saw our guys getting pushed around a little bit. I mean, that kind of goes for them just as a collective. I mean, just look at the rushing yard totals. I mean, the guys had 287 yards rushing and about, what, 576 total yards that they've given up. I mean, that's realistically a game and a half worth of yards. So, I mean, I don't want to say that I'm down on this defense. It's just that I think I need to lower my expectations and just really kind of accept it for who they are. Just kind of be happy when they go out and they can make a stand. But at the end of the day, it kind of goes back to what Mike said and why we are so passionate about this program, is because I know like what my defensive line looked like when I was able to play with some very talented guys. Our defensive line room looks a lot like that defensive line room looks in Carolina right now. And I think that's why I have put so much pressure on this team and expecting to see so much, because I mean, those guys can play football. They can play with anyone else. And I mean, I think my second biggest takeaway is that I don't know what's going on with the culture of this defense. There's been too many instances where teammates are snapping at each other. I mean, you see Noah Taylor come kind of run to the sideline and snapping at guys. I think it was, I forget who it was.
Tony Grimes.
Tony Grimes had the late hit. I mean, yeah, as a leader, you pull that guy to the side, but you don't go chirping at that guy, especially a guy who's from another program, a guy who's kind of a rival program. Like, I mean, yeah, you've been there in a training camp, you played a couple of games, but still, I mean, I know, like, so as close as me and Mike were, if I'd have gotten his face, that would still be an issue like that. Now, you say I'm a guy that you've been playing against, that's been on the other side, and you transfer in, things like that are going to happen. And I think we kind of all, as a collective fan base, kind of brushed over the moment that happened earlier in the season where the defensive guys were chipping at each other. And I mean, that's not what you want to see. I mean, that side of the ball is usually close. I mean, kind of strangely close how close some of us are still in talk now, and how we just kind of fed off of each other. So I mean, you have to be in tune to play defensive football. You have to be able to trust that the guy next to you, the guy lined up behind you, in front of you, that he's going to do what he's supposed to do so you can do your job the best way. And it just doesn't look like there's a lot of trust amongst these guys. And I mean, I know sometimes you have your risk, but as Mike can kind of tell you, and you know as well, Vip, like when things start happening on game day and in front of nationally televised crowds, then things have probably been boiling over for a while. So
yeah, that's locker room stuff that's coming out. And it doesn't mean that they hate each other. It doesn't mean they don't like playing with each other. It means that it's frustration boiling over. Mm-hmm. And frustration usually has a lot of sources. So again, like this is, you know, to go back to, you know, what we were talking about at the top of this pod here, like EJ knows what he's talking about. This isn't like he's not calling out certain players. He's not being overly negative and overly critical here. He knows exactly what he's talking about because he lived it and he did it. The other thing too, and I think, you know, EJ, correct me if I'm wrong, is the extra point of this is, you know, they're chirping at each other. There seems like maybe there's a, when we say culture problem, mm-hmm. like there just seems like there's a disconnect from a either a personality standpoint or just a relational standpoint between the mm-hmm. guys right exactly. now. That doesn't mean that it's not fixable. It doesn't mean that they don't like each other and they don't all get along. It means in this game, something happened. There was stuff that had been boiling over previously, maybe from previous mm-hmm. games. You know, and listen, I can tell you from firsthand experience that, you know, when you're hearing from the outside, you know, that you're not holding your weight, you know, we even heard this internally a little bit, you know, we were not, the offense wasn't carrying our weight, you know, when we played, when you and I were playing. And let's be completely honest here. That was a top 10 defense we were put on the field every single year. And it, we had games where we looked really good. TJ's throwing for 300 plus, 400 plus yards and a bunch of touchdowns. And we had other games where we needed the defense to score two touchdowns for us to win the game and have four turnovers. Like, there were times where we just, as an offense, we felt that pressure. And that's very frustrating because it's a pride thing. So for us, it's not necessarily that, you know, we're fighting with each other, that we don't like each other. If you see guys butting heads on the sidelines, it's because there are outside frustrations that are building and building and building. You're hearing chatter, and there's a pride thing. If you don't feel like your teammates think that as a unit, you're carrying your weight, if you don't feel like the fan base or the coaching staff or whatever, if you feel like you're playing second fiddle to the other side of the ball, I mean, yeah, that creates a complex. It does. And that creates confidence issues and creates frustration issues. It all sort of builds and bubbles over and eventually, you know, can result in some chirping on the sidelines and things, but it doesn't mean that next week, that's still going to be the same problem. It doesn't mean that today in film, it's the same problem. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, don't think that when EJ says, you know, there's a culture issue on the defense that, you know, it's throwing the towel on the defense, they're done. Let's just hope that we can score 75 points a game and you know, boat race teams and win. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is there's clearly some stuff that's been building for a while. And I'm hoping, and I know you are, that they've gotten this out of their system now and we can start building. You know, Gene Chizik's defense several years ago, VIP, I mean, when you guys went played in the ACC championship game, like there were those defenses leading up to that 2015 team weren't great. Okay. But they eventually built themselves into something. And I think I even saw this in the 2015 season where that defense built itself into a bend, don't break kind of defense under Chizik. So listen, we're four games in and we told you that because you're playing some, you know, not lesser competition, because again, Middle Tennessee State versus Miami, it's not like we went out and we played Furman three times. Okay. No offense to Furman, really.
I mean, Sisters of the Blind.
Yeah, we weren't playing Mother Mary, Sisters that's Coach of the Blind out there.
Yeah, that's Coach Brewer's number one reference, Sisters of the Blind.
Mother Mary, Sisters of the Blind. We weren't out there playing them three times. You know, we beat three good teams, good football teams, especially in App State. You know, Georgia State's a much better team than they've been in the past. So, you know, and those are mid-major teams. They're Division I-A or, you know, FBS football teams. So, you know, we talked about there might be a lag in development. There might be a lag in sort of that at the point that you know what team you have, it might be an extra week or two into this season. Whereas normally you'd know about week three, week four, it might be week five or six before we really know what this team is. You know, the defense has put things on tape that are pretty good. Mm-hmm. They've put some stuff on tape that's pretty bad.
We have some great athletes on that defensive unit. And I think that's really a lot where the frustration comes from. And I think, definitely for me, because I mean, over the past few years, what we've been talking about talent and depth on that defensive unit. Well, that's what I really feel like that we have now. I feel like we can go too deep at almost every position on the defense in the defensive unit. And we're not talking about a lot of young guys. So, I mean, yeah, there's a new system and everything, but and that's what I mean. Just kind of going back to your point, like the culture of a defense is knowing how to communicate with each other. It just seems like these guys don't know how to communicate with each other when things are going well, they're out there, they're chest bumping. But when things go bad or things aren't going well, they start chipping at each other. And that's really just a mindset change. Like you say, it can get better. It's more so saying that, hey, we need to learn how to we're frustrated right now, learn how to put that moment behind us and still communicate with each other, because we're gonna need each other for the rest of this game and the rest of this season. So
maybe a game like Notre Dame is what does it for them.
EJ, you hit on the low moment of the game for me with that Carolina defense. It was Tony Grimes picking up the late hit out of bounds penalty. Noah Taylor kind of gets in his face, basically just telling him we can't be having these kind of mistakes in these kind of moments. Grimes takes a jab at his own teammate. And that was kind of the moment. Like, I was already feeling really down about this Carolina defense, but when I saw that, that's kind of like where you mentioned, like, all hope that I had for the defense, however slim it was, that they could make a turnaround, it kind of went away for me when I saw that moment, because that group at that moment looked so disjointed. And I kind of compare it to the 2015 team that I played on for Carolina, where if somebody like Landon Turner is getting in my face, or somebody like Jeff Schottmer, Shaquille Rashad, Mac Hollins, Quinshaw Davis, if one of those guys is getting in my face, I know that they have a pretty good reason to be getting in my face, and that it's probably me that is not holding up my end of the bargain and not playing to the standard that we kind of talk about. Like, you know, every Carolina team, we want to be ACC champions. We want to be one of the goals is always win the last game of the season. So if one of the leaders on your team, which Noah Taylor, even though he comes from Virginia, Noah Taylor is one of the leaders on this Carolina team by all accounts, I think you have to have the awareness there where if somebody is getting in your face, there's no malicious intent, or they're not trying to get under your skin, or they're not like picking on you, or anything kind of like that. And that was the moment for me where it kind of, it was disheartening is really the only word I guess you could use, because I think we all had really high hopes when Coach Chizik comes in, and they have been stacking a lot of talent with, I think, four straight top 25 recruiting classes. Mm-hmm. So to see a moment like that, that was for me, you know, you could give up as many yards, you could give up as many touchdowns, to see the guys kind of like that. And like you mentioned, Mike, it's frustration boiling over from the team not being where they probably thought they were. But EJ, it's
some of that too. Sorry, dude, I don't mean to cut you off there, but some of that too, there's a broader developmental thing that goes along with that. And I didn't understand that I was going through this at the time until many years after I was done out of college. But there's, when you see things like that, when you see chirping between the players and you see, you know, things boil over like we saw with Tony Grimes, you know, these are young men growing into men literally in the moment and moment by moment, and learning how to deal with certain circumstances, disappointment after high expectations, disappointment, you know, high expectations as a unit. You know, I'm associated with a unit that's supposed to be really good. I'm supposed to be a player who's supposed to be playing very good, and I'm not playing up to my own personal standards.
Player who is supposed to go to the NFL.
Yes, and who personally expects to go to the NFL, right? And maybe Tony feels like, and I haven't watched, you know, enough film on Tony to know this. I don't know what the eye in the sky is saying on Tony, but maybe Tony feels, you know, on one play or on a series of plays or overall, he's not performing in the way that he expects himself to perform. Maybe other guys feel that way about themselves. And you're learning how to deal, as a man, you're learning how to deal with these things in real time. And unfortunately, now that every game is televised, and not just certain games, but every single game is televised on national TV, we see that stuff. You know, we see that growing up in real time. And they're learning, you know, you don't realize that you're growing as a young man in the middle of these football games. I can think back to specific lessons I learned from specific plays in specific games. Now, as you know, at 34 years old, when I was 20 and 21 playing in games at Carolina, I can think back to the play that taught me a lesson that I now use in my personal life, or the issue I had in the locker room that taught me how to deal with a specific type of personality, right? With other folks I meet now out on the street. You don't realize it all, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, man. Like your brain is still forming. Like your frontal lobe isn't fully developed at this point. Like things are still like you're growing as a human being, and you're growing as a man, and you're learning how to handle yourself in a multitude of situations. And a football locker room really puts it takes all those big pressure situations and it puts them into little 3 and 4 second increments that you have to deal with and adapt to and process all right now. And sometimes you just don't do that the right way. But I can guarantee you that some of that stuff that we saw, some of the, like we've been talking about chirping on the sidelines and issues that we're seeing maybe between guys on a personal level, to the extent that actually exists in the locker room, that stuff's getting sorted out now. And it's working itself out. It may not be comfortable for us to watch, but I promise it's working itself out and will have positive effects down the road.
Yeah. And EJ, a week after
positivity pod, baby, yeah.
A week after throwing for a pedestrian 150 yards in his first ever start, Drew Pine, he comes down to Chapel Hill. He eclipses that 150 yards mark by halftime. He finishes with 289 yards, three touchdowns, and no turnovers. It's another week and another career-high performance for the defense. We've been doing this podcast for I don't know how many years now, and I don't know how many games we've talked about on Monday where the other quarterback has a career high. It's something that it's a stigma that this program cannot shake at this point, where it doesn't matter if you're a first-year quarterback or a fourth-year starting quarterback. You circle the North Carolina game on your schedule because of the defense, and you know you're going to have a chance to really shine. What did you kind of see from Drew Pine and the approach that Carolina took against him?
I don't really know, man, but all I know is that I don't know what the approach and the mindset was. I know that they were trying to pressure him a little bit more, but I mean, our pass rush just isn't there enough to make quarterbacks uncomfortable. We're not, and that's why no matter, a lot of these quarterbacks that are coming in, if they're studying their game plan, if they know where their reads are, most of the time they're getting through their first, second, third reads. I mean, I saw a couple of plays where we're getting first downs where the third guy in trips, we're playing 11 yards off of them. Like, you can't stop anybody. Like, you're not going to stop anybody if they know they can guarantee, they're guaranteed to get seven yards a game. And also, I mean, I will give credit where credit's due. I mean, the Mayer kid really looks like he's going to be another great tight end from Notre Dame. I mean, the kid had an impressive game. A lot of times we were there and he was just making great catches. I mean, he's a strong kid. So I think a lot of that credit goes to him. I mean, he had 88 of those yards, seven catches. So, I mean, he had a really good game. And I mean, our guys were with him. They were in coverage. But I mean, sometimes you just play against guys who just have it. I mean, you wouldn't expect guys to go out there and stop Gronk. Not comparing this guy to Gronk.
His nickname is Baby Gronk.
I mean, he wears.
He looks like it out there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he did his best Gronk impression yesterday, and I think a lot of that. I mean, I'm not going to discredit our defense. I mean, that's a talented kid. I mean, he's at Notre Dame, and we all know that through our recruiting processes and playing against them, Notre Dame usually gets guys with 4 and 5 stars beside their name in the recruiting process. So this kid deserves to be there just like everyone else. So I definitely will attribute it to that. And again, the rest of it really is to the pass rush or the lack thereof. I mean, the guys, Kimon Rucker and some of those other guys who we've been kind of looking to get this pressure. I mean, we need it from everyone else. This has to be a collective thing because, I mean, if it's not a collective thing, guys like this, they're going to find a way to pick up the blitzes, pick up the pressures. He's going to throw all day. And if we're playing against a running quarterback, if we get out of our lanes, he's just going to have a career rushing day on us. So, I mean, just that lack of pass rush is really going to hurt us in so many different ways that if you're just watching a game and saying, oh, we're not getting sacks. No, that's just not the thing. You cannot get a sack all game and not and have a quarterback not be comfortable if he's throwing that ball away or if other things happening, they're checking into other plays, then the pass rush is really doing that. I mean, it gets to a certain level of intimidation. And Mike can tell you this, if you have a guy that's beating you all day on pass rush, your stance is going to be a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. The offensive line is going to start setting a little bit differently, and it's going to completely mess up the flow of the offense. So, I mean, it has ramifications, not just on third down and long. It really affects the offense's whole game plan because you're not going to keep dropping your guy back and he's going to get hurt. Now that we know that they have to run the ball, when they're passing, they're going to be in obvious pass formations. When they're running, they're going to be in obvious run formations because they're going to have to get the blockers in. So I mean, it's just a lot of things that kind of feed off that, and we're not really getting that right now. And once again, this kind of leads to more frustration because I mean, if you look at that roster, I mean, we have the guys, we have the talent, we have the people that can do that. I mean, I don't have as much confidence in the back end, but I think having more pass rush will help those guys out too, because they know they won't have to cover for as long. So, I mean, it just really has so many different effects and ripple effects throughout the team. I mean, if you're pass rushing well, I mean, I'll tell you this from personal experience, it makes it a lot easier to play the run on the way to the quarterback when you're already getting off, as one of my old coaches used to say, high booty spatting, and you're knocking those guys back. So, I mean, that's just something that's been missing for a long time from this program. And I mean, hats off to their tight end who had a great day. I mean, hats off to him for having another career day. I mean, I can't, that's one thing that I will say that I'm guilty of. Pat White did have a career day against us. So maybe the curse started longer ago than we thought it did.
Yeah. I still have nightmares about Baylor in the bowl game.
Yeah.
Knowing that they didn't have a quarterback and just being able to gash us and overmatch our defensive line time after time. But I was looking at the Pro Football Focus grades, and I normally take a lot of stock into them, but without knowing the call, I don't know how they graded this UNC Notre Dame game, because it's hard to even assess who was at fault a lot of times for this North Carolina defense with how far away they were from some of Notre Dame's receiving options. Like, a lot of those guys, you know, you guys as linemen, we could put you out there on routes on some of those wheel routes, and you're catching and walking into the end zone with how open some of those guys were. And that was another frustrating thing with the defense, where it's one thing if Notre Dame is just outmanning you and just running it up, which they were doing for a good portion of the game. But it's the times where it's like, what is the game plan? It's like I can make peace with the Baylor game because we knew what their game plan was. Mm-hmm. And we tried to match up with them. We just didn't have the bodies to match up with them. But it wasn't a case of this receiver is going to run a wheel three straight plays, banking on one time the defense kind of forgetting whose responsibility it was. And that was another problem I saw for the Carolina defense. And a stat that kind of puts this into perspective for the defense right now: Carolina is the 126th total defense in the country. This is out of 131 teams. They're giving up 495.2 yards per game. It's the second worst in the Power Five. Only Nebraska is worse. And
who's beneath us? Who are the five teams beneath us?
It's Nebraska, Bowling Green, FIU, Ohio, and Charlotte. So Nebraska is really the only comparable.
State North Carolina is representing that bottom 10 defense.
Yeah, and it's never right now in 2022. It's never good to be in the same conversation as Nebraska.
Not at all, man.
Yeah, this was 30 years ago.
Yeah. It's 30 years ago, and you're comparing yourself to Nebraska. You're like, oh wow, I might be in the national title conversation, but mm-hmm. now it's Scott Frost getting fired after losing to who was it? Georgia Southern from the Sun Belt Conference. But Mike, you mentioned earlier the run game for North Carolina and how Notre Dame did a pretty good job bottling them up. The highest run blocking grade, according to Pro Football Focus, among Carolina's offensive line. All offensive linemen played every snap, so it's easy to tell who was out there. But the highest run block grade was 60.4, so not too good. Carolina rushed for only 2.4 yards per carry. What did you see there, and why was Notre Dame able to kind of control the point of attack?
That was it. They controlled the point of attack. We didn't get enough movement on the first level, and because of that, they had linebacker run throughs, and we weren't getting to our second level assignments. You know, ho hum. You know, things, points I've made before. But that's you see a game like Notre Dame is why it's so important to get first level movement, because those linebackers, Notre Dame's linebackers, were hitting gaps. When they saw pullers leave, they were hitting gaps. When they saw double teams get set up, they started shooting gaps. They understood where they were supposed to be, and that's because they're a very talented, very well-coached defense. But they understood where they were supposed to be. And they exploited that. You can solve a lot of those problems by getting first-level movement and just creating a mush there at the second level. And eventually you have a guy like, you know, Omarion that can make you right. You can have a Petaway that can make you right. You can have DJ Jones can make you right. You know, guys that are talented with the ball in their hands. So if you can just create sort of a cluster and a mess there on the second level enough, you don't even have to necessarily get off on your assignment. Obviously the dream is to take, if you're running a double team, whether it's a zone or a gap scheme, take that double team straight to your linebacker, your second level assignment, and literally put that dude on skates and run that defensive lineman's butt straight into that linebacker and just create a wall that way. That's clinic tape. That doesn't happen really ever. I mean, once in a while it does, but it's very rare for that to happen. What normally happens is you get enough movement, you know, two, three, maybe a fourth step or a third and a half step on that defensive lineman pushed back, okay, to where he's stalemating you by the end of that rep. You're stalemating him by the end of that rep, but you moved him far enough back that you're now right in that linebacker's face, and that linebacker can't see clearly where the ball carrier is, and you fall forward for an extra yard or two. And every once in a while, that extra yard or two falling forward goes for a first down, or it, like we saw against App State, it can break for a 50-some-odd yard touchdown. So that's the thing that I didn't think we did a great job of in the run game, was getting enough first level movement to create problems at the second level. You don't always have to get off on your second level assignment. You don't always have to, you know, every rep doesn't have to be clinic tape. Sometimes you can get just enough movement on that defensive lineman to create some issues at the second level, whether it's vision issues or spacing issues for those linebackers. And even though you don't get your hands on them, and even though you don't actually lock up for that second level assignment, you don't get your hands on their breastplate, you don't make contact, you've created enough mess in front of them that you've altered either their pursuit angle. You've made them change what they plan to do in terms of hitting a gap or where they expected the ball to be, or you just created enough enough trash in his vision to where he couldn't see where the ball was for a split second, and it got you an extra yard or two. Sometimes that's just enough. If we can get more of that first level movement, which I saw early in the season against, you know, those Sun Belt teams and against FAMU, I saw that working pretty well. If we can do that moving forward through the ACC schedule, we'll be okay. I think Notre Dame was a big test, because that's a big, strong, athletic defensive line with really fast, smart linebackers. But if we can learn from this tape and understand that everything doesn't have to be clinic tape on every rep, that we just got to get some more movement on the first level, I think we'll be okay.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Yeah, even with all that being said, and where this, we've talked about it before, that this offense is kind of going to be handicapped with how well the offensive line does, it almost feels irrelevant to talk about the offense, because the standard on that side of the ball can't be perfection. It can't be they need a score on every possession. It can't be the 50 plus points. It's the same way we talk about quarterbacks having career days. It feels like we've talked about a bunch of times that the standard for this offense can't be they need to score 50 plus points to win, because, you know,
well, it forces us to sit here and nitpick things, which is, yeah. I mean, which is the point of this podcast, right? Yeah. It's to nitpick certain things from a technique standpoint. That's what EJ and I and you do. But, you know, we shouldn't have to sit here and say that the offense was unsuccessful scoring five touchdowns and dropping what should have been 35 points.
Yeah.
Right. Because we're sitting here nitpicking that, you know, we got 1 yard of push on the offensive line in the run game in the second half instead of 3 yards of push. And we weren't able to, you know, snap off, you know, too many first downs in the run game. Like, we shouldn't have to sit here and do that.
And kind of expanding on the offense, you do a great job covering the line play. I saw some people questioning what Antoine Green's role would be when he came back, and he answered that. He's a starter. He is one of the best receivers on this Carolina team.
I think real boom or bust too, because Antoine Green, every game is good for, like, had he dropped that ball and also had he catch that ball and run that fast, run that far. Like, every single game he's in, he's just a boom or bust guy. Like, and you know you're going to get it from him. He's going to you're going to pull your hair out once or twice watching him play. But then you're going to be jumping up and down screaming for joy another time. It's like every single time he's out there, he's like a cardiac kid.
Yeah, he had a drop, but the way he gets behind defenses and stretches them vertically, it was like a welcome back moment for Josh Downs and Antoine Green, where they come back, they combine for 182 yards and four touchdowns. The young receivers did a good job in those two's absence, but when that team is fully healthy, I don't think there's any question that it's Josh Downs and Antoine Green. You'd like to see somebody like Kobe Pesor more involved, where it was kind of like Josh Downs his freshman year, where, you know, you have this talented guy on the bench and he's just waiting for his opportunity. And when Kobe Pesor's opportunity came, he did take advantage of it. He was Carolina's best receiver in the App State game and the Georgia State game. So I think moving forward, I'd like to see Carolina get a little more creative, getting him on the field and kind of not platooning him and Josh Downs, because Josh Downs is so good, but finding more ways to kind of get Kobe Pesor involved with the offense.
Well, you know, one way I think we can do that is I don't know that we need to be married to this use the run to set up the pass philosophy. If that's what Phil Longo's doing, I'm not in Phil Longo's head, but from what I can see, it looks like we're that traditional, like, we want to use the run to set up the explosive pass game. I think we can be the opposite. You know, I mean, we can use the pass game to set up the run. So we saw some issues with the run game against Notre Dame, but our pass game looked pretty good and our pass protection on the whole looked good. There were some issues that I pointed out, and we can talk about that in terms of twists and stuff, but as far as protection is concerned, but I think we can use the pass to set up the run. It works the same way. It's just in the inverse, right? I mean, everybody, you know, old football heads, you know, we like to think like use the run. And then you pop off a big pass. Well, you can do the same thing. You can stretch a defense in the pass, right? Stretch them. And then hand it off on a draw or hand it off on a power and you gash them for 10 or 12 yards in the run. And sometimes that's all you need to then set up the next explosive play. So I think we can, you know, set up opportunities for a guy like Pesor by becoming super, you know, real pass happy, and the run becomes a complement to the pass game. I think we can do it that way. And again, I'm not in Phil Longo's head, but from what I can tell, I think we're trying really hard to be balanced. And, you know, the priority is setting up the run in order to benefit the pass game, as opposed to the opposite. Maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah. And EJ, I know a lot of the fan base is feeling pretty hopeless waking up on Monday when it comes to the defense. You can pick any stat to choose from the defensive performance. A few of them I have is that this is the third straight game that the Carolina defense had given up 10 first downs in a single quarter. The Irish scored on six straight possessions. They rushed for... let me see, where's the rushing? They rushed for 5.6 yards per carry. The quarterback has a career high game. Looking at it glass half full. I want you to try to look at it glass half full.
I know it's tough, a lot, man.
I know it's tough to do after I listed out all those stats. Looking at glass half full, where can this defense improve? Because a lot of people like myself are looking at this and saying, I don't know how you fix this in season. Like, we're getting paid to analyze this team, but I don't know how you fix this.
Like, what's the one good thing you're seeing that they can build on to maybe break open some other stuff? Kemon Rucker.
Kemon
Rucker's bull rush.
They swarm to the ball. I will say this, that I will never, and I don't see myself coming on this podcast talking about a lack of effort from our team. That was 3 or 4 years ago, when what we didn't know was that that was a team that was really kind of frustrated with their head coach and not really motivated to play for him. So I think that swarming to the ball, I think that our depth, I think those are two things that we can be encouraged about. And I do think that there's the another thing that's so frustration. Maybe we should call this the frustration pod and not the positivity pod. Something else that I'm kind of
this
frustrated
is the therapeutic pod for me.
It is a therapeutic pod. Yeah. If I discipline and taking ownership of their assignments, if those guys could just do that with the athleticism that they have, yeah, we're still going to get beat on some plays. But I think overall, that is the quickest way for us to make an improvement. One, we have to improve on that. But I think once we, as a whole, as a unit, once they take ownership of eye discipline, of reading your keys, of knowing what you saw in practice and hopefully in film study all week, is to be true, keep your eyes on your luggage. Just keep your eyes on your luggage. Do what you've been coached to do. Do what falls within the game plan. That way, the coaches know when to adjust. If you're going out there and you're not doing something and you're coming back and telling the coach a different thing, he's not really going to see the big picture until probably when he goes back to watch the whole game film. So I just do what you're coached to do. Do what the play calls for, and I think that you'll see a vast improvement, because then these guys can let their athleticism go to work. I still think we have the two most athletic linebackers in the ACC, maybe two of the most athletic in the country. We've been saying that for years, though, haven't we? So, I mean, it's time for some of this athleticism to turn into production on the field.
Yeah, the problem with the Carolina defense at this point is we're not asking them to be a top 25 unit. That's kind of gone out the window. We're just asking them to not be the 126th unit in the country, which doesn't feel like that crazy of an ask when they have had four straight top 25 recruiting classes. And the initial message from Mack Brown when he got here was that he wants North Carolina to play for national championships. And when the team went to the Orange Bowl behind guys like Chaz Surratt and Michael Carter and Javonte Williams and Sam Howell, it really did feel like they were progressing towards that goal.
Ahead of schedule is what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It felt like
I'm trying not to say it was a fluke year.
Yeah.
Right. I think maybe there's just maybe some pieces left and we're still trying to fill those gaps. I don't know, but I'm not on the it was a flukier thing yet, but we definitely felt like we were ahead of schedule in that Orange Bowl year.
Yeah, and the public perception from this program used to be, or I guess it still is in some sense, that Mack Brown is saying that the goal is to play for national championships. But, you know, the further we get away from that Orange Bowl appearance, it seems like the further we're getting away from them being a national title contender. And it's tough to watch for like people who care about the program, which I know a ton of people do that played for Carolina, and a ton of people that are on Inside Carolina's premium message boards, and a lot of people that are listening to this podcast. Like, Carolina basketball fans outnumber Carolina football fans by like a 100-to-1 ratio. But the people that care about Carolina football
care.
They care. It's passionate. It's why Inside Carolina is the number one site on 24/7, and it's constantly the most visited site. And it's tough to watch Mack Brown's press conferences right now, because it seems like there is a huge disconnect from reality to come out in the post game and say things like he's proud the guys didn't quit, or that Notre Dame looks like they're a top 10 team. Like, we didn't just watch them play Marshall and struggle against Marshall and struggle against Cal. How much of the problem with this team, Mike, do you think is that Mack Brown seemingly won't admit that there is a problem, and whatever I think he is drastically a different person behind closed doors when he's talking to his staff appears to the media. But how much of the problem with the fan base do you think there is that after a game like that, it's almost like he can't admit his own team's shortcomings?
I think Mac has been doing this long enough that he knows not to beat up his team publicly. That the opportunity presents itself to put a brave face on and to try and put a positive spin on something publicly, he's going to do it because they're about to get tore up in film. Today, I'm sure they got tore up in film. On offense and defense. Again, offense scored 35 points. They had two quarters in that game where they didn't look great. I mean, they were three and out most of the time. And to be very fair to the defense, it's not easy on the defense when you've got the offense going three and out. So defense is getting some stops. Offense comes out, goes three and out. The next drive, Notre Dame scores. Like, it's just, that's how that doesn't help out our defense at all when we're not moving the ball and we're not scoring points. Now, to your point, we don't need to be perfect every single drive. We shouldn't have to score 10 touchdowns in a game to win a game. But the timing of three and outs and even just moving the ball and getting the defense an 8 or 9 play break, that stuff matters. That helps defensive performance too. So we can't have situations on offense like we had where we're going three and out, kind of getting stifled on offense. And the defense is having to roll back out there tired and beat up. And, you know, maybe their confidence is down. That's not helping, but Mac knows that. He's been doing this long enough that he knows, like, I'm about to tear these guys up in film on Sunday. I'm about to tear this coaching staff up in private meetings. I'm not going to beat them up in the media right after the game. Okay. Those guys internally, they know Mac's messaging. Internally, they know what they got to fix. They're being told what they got to fix. You know that. I know that. EJ knows that. So publicly, it doesn't help anybody, and it only makes the problem worse. To the, you know, whatever the problem is, which we don't know what the problem is. It only makes the problem worse when you're out throwing your team under the bus. Now, some folks see guys like Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban. I mean, they get like real fiery. Well, you know, they can do that. If they want to throw their guys under the bus publicly, you know, after a bad game, they can do that. They're also winning 10 and 11 games a year. Okay. But when you've got a team that you're trying to build an identity, when you're trying to build confidence with, there's a lot of new pieces on this team, including the quarterback. We look at Drake May and he throws, you know, for ungodly stats every single time he's out there. This kid's started 4 games. Like, he's a baby. Like, we forget, you know, we've been seeing this kid. We think this is like this long sustained success, and we're coming off of Sam Howell with long sustained success. We forget he's still new. He's a new piece. Yeah. So even the most critical player on the field is a new guy. So Mac's building a team. He's building a rapport. He's building confidence. He's building a locker room. He's still building a program. So it doesn't do any good to throw them under the bus publicly. That's not what's going to get them to where they want to be.
Yeah. We've gotten about 50 minutes into this podcast and we haven't really even mentioned that Drake May threw for over 300 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had the one fumble. If you're really nitpicking, kind of giving Notre Dame a short field to work with.
A lot of that was late too. It was the first drive and then it was late in the game.
Yeah. And his quarterback rating 183.7. Drew Pine, who had a career day, his quarterback rating was still below Drake May's. So it's kind of easy to take for granted what Drake May is doing against a team like Notre Dame in only his fourth start, where you watch Drake May and the potential oozes off the field. He looks every bit the part of somebody who's going to be a high draft pick in the coming years for Carolina.
That's what we do, man. Our defense gets quarterbacks drafted because the opposing quarterbacks are going to have career days. And then our quarterbacks have to throw for so many yards and touchdowns.
They're also going to get drafted. Yeah.
Think about it.
Let's make this point. Okay. Obligatory. Why are these not our permanent uniforms? Are these not the permanent uniforms?
No argument from me. I really don't know where any of that pushback is really even coming from. I keep shouting from the top of my mountain, make these the permanent uniforms. And every person I shout it to, they're like, I agree with you. So I keep shouting.
Maybe we love them so much because we're only getting them in doses. Maybe that's why we love them so much. So it's actually the plan's working.
Yeah, and I'm a fan, except for
Drake May's quarterback sleeves. They got to break that up with some Carolina blue.
God, that was bad.
Yeah,
that can't be all navy all the way down there. But everybody else, that looks Nike will fix that. They got to get a new one in. J-Bone, if you're listening, call Nike.
Yeah,
fix the quarterback sleeve. But those uniforms are sick nasty.
I'm such a fan of Carolina's normal uniforms, but
yeah, they are, and we do have some of the crispest uniforms generally.
already have the best uniforms, the best unique color combination in the country, but the retro uniforms take it up a notch. It looks classic. It looks timeless. It looks unbelievably clean in primetime games. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to keep yelling. We're just going to keep yelling, make them the permanent uniform. Nobody's really pushing back against us, but we're also not getting any answers really on why this isn't the permanent.
We're not getting
uniform.
Any answers.
And we just found out that Sway had the answer. So somebody has to have the answer, right?
But guys, always great talking to you. Carolina back in action this Saturday, October 1st. It's a 3:30 game on the ACC network. It's the pesky Virginia Tech Hokies. Always tough. But they're getting them away from Lane Stadium. Virginia Tech at North Carolina, Keenan Stadium, 3:30 p.m., ACC Network. Always a pleasure talking with you guys, and appreciate everybody who listens or watches, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.